You're listening to Taking Stock with Pim Fox and Kathleen Hayes on Bloomberg Radio.
How do you get to Carnegie Hall? Well, we all know the answer to that. You practice, practice, and practice. Well, if you want to go to Broadway and you want to make a killing, what do? Well, you probably talk to our next guest, John Abrelio. He is the author of I Wanna Be a Producer, How to Make a Killing on Broadway or Get Killed. And he joins us now in the studio. John, thank you very much for being here.
Yes, thank you.
Give people a little sense of your background, because you've been doing this, as I just described earlier, you've been doing this for almost more than four decades.
Yeah.
But in a variety of roles that I think probably someone's going to write a book about your life one day.
I don't know who wants to hear that. Well, I started, you know, before I even went to college, I loved the theater. I studied music and theater. And then when I went to...
Yankees, I think.
Yes, that was it. 9 years
See,
old,
I read that,
my first show.
Who sat next to you at that show?
Oh, my parents and my sister. My sister was on my right. My mother was on the left. I can remember every second of it. And I was bitten. I mean, I was infected. That was what I wanted to do in some capacity. And I didn't really care what capacity, performing in the backstage, whatever. It just struck me as being magical. And I also talk in the book about having been raised as a Roman Catholic. And the church, before I went to see Damn Yankees, was so theatrical for me that it inspired me to want to be around lights and bells and whatever. Anyway, I went off to school. I did a lot of directing and acting at college, and then it was Vietnam, and I thought I'd get drafted. I wasn't. I went off to law school and found out about entertainment lawyers. And the dean of entertainment lawyers was John Wharton in the firm Paul Weiss, Rifkin, Wharton & Garrison. Most people know that firm. And I went there as an entertainment lawyer, and I had the opportunity to put two things together, my love for the entertainment business and my training as a lawyer. And I did that for many, many, many years.
You know, I was also raised Roman Catholic, and I never quite thought about the olden days with the bells and kneeling down
bells
and getting
and
up.
And smells
and all the beautiful vestments. I mean, it's much more contemporary and modern now, but that's an interesting connection. Talk to us a bit more then about how you went from being an entertainment lawyer to doing things like a revival of Chorus Line and Dreamgirls. These are big, big shows and they've been so successful. How did that step go from just telling people what to do to actually putting your career and your money on the line?
Well, what happened was I spent so many years representing producers and actors and directors, and I was, in a way, a shadow producer for many people who had no idea how to produce a show. And when I was thinking of Chorus Line, because I go all the way back there when it was first done 40 years ago, I listened to a line that Cassie, who is the woman who's trying to get back into the chorus with Zach, the director, she has a line when she says to Zach, "I don't want to keep teaching others what I should be doing myself." And I said, I think that's exactly what I should be doing. I should be producing and not telling everybody else what to do. I'm tired of that. And that's what got me to produce myself. And I think the grounding and the training of spending decades helping other people was an invaluable education. You can't get a better one.
Can you tell us about Patti LuPone's swimming pool?
Yeah, that's in my book. I have a book. I have a chapter called "Tale of Two Divas." One of them is Patti, and Patti is a good old friend and was a client of mine. And she was the original star of Sunset Boulevard, based on the famous film Sunset Boulevard, written by Andrew Lloyd Webber. And I was at the opening in London. It was a spectacular opening. And everybody thought it would be a huge hit to come to Broadway. And lo and behold, Frank Rich, who was the most powerful critic in the English-speaking theater, who was there that night, and I was with him and his wife, the next day he gave it a pretty bad review and essentially said that Patti, although a wonderful singer, was miscast. Well, when you know you have a multi-million dollar investment and you're about to come to Broadway, you start to worry about that. And Andrew decided to replace Patty. Since I knew Patty and Andrew, they both asked me to mediate instead of hopefully not go to war. And I did try to mediate it. It wasn't that easy, but they both wanted in good faith to get this behind them. They did. They settled it. And then about 2 months later, given that Patty obviously got a fair amount of money, she took me to her home in Connecticut, Kent, Connecticut. She took me up on the hill, showed me her new pool, and said, "This is the Andrew Lloyd Webber Memorial Pool."
Well, you know, I would say, though, as an aside, if anybody deserves to be a diva, I think Patty LuPone is one of them, right?
There's no doubt about it. And diva does not mean, by the way, anything negative. Diva means a major singing star. Well, people think it's negative. It's not.
Back to John Brilio. His book is officially released today, I Want to Be a Producer, How to Make a Killing on Broadway or Get Killed. He started out in school, in college, acting, learning how to be in a play, in a show, playing musical instruments, ended up going to law school and becoming one of the top movers and shakers on Broadway when it comes to producing some very, very big shows. Dreamgirls, Michael Bennett. This was a man who was so important in terms of leading us into this current era of shows, how they're done, the impact they have. Dreamgirls, pivotal to him and to you.
Yeah, Chorus Line, of course, was Michael's first huge hit. He had done many shows before that, but Chorus Line, which was 40 years ago, really changed the nature of Broadway, both the business issues and also creative issues like nothing else had ever been done before. I mean, it was a show that had no intermission. That never happened before. But it was important to do it because of the sort of the nature of the tension and the involvement in the show. And then you jump to Dreamgirls, which was in 1981. Where Frank Rich, who was the critic at the time, said the torch now had been passed from Jerome Robbins to Michael Bennett. It was almost cinematic. No one had ever seen a play before that from the beginning to the end sort of rushed by you scenically and lighting-wise, and it never stops. There's never a blackout. There's never a moment where you're not hearing something. And no one had ever done that before. And it was done as simply as you could imagine by Robin Wagner. So Michael was an originator in the truest sense of the word and a genius. And of course, the tragedy of it all was in 1987. He died of AIDS, like so many other wonderful people in the theater. And I often wonder what would have happened if he, of course, lived. Today, he'd only be, you know, he'd be in his early 70s. And I think he still would have been producing and directing and writing.
Opening nights. Tell us about some of the opening night highlights that you have attended. And maybe just fill us in on the various characters that attend opening nights, because this is also a sort of memoir, but it's also a very practical book. It gives you a lot of detail about how to get involved in Broadway.
Yeah, opening nights, of course, is when you finally have it done and you can celebrate, hopefully. And I've always said, don't tell me, and you should not know the reviews if you can help it, because you have to have that moment in time where you can congratulate the hundreds of people you're working with, and you don't want them to see in your eyes the disappointment or the tragedy of having a failure. So it's a time to celebrate, but the one memory that I have is the opening night of Annie, which was absolutely wonderful. And no one really knew if it was a big hit or not. And in those days, as opposed to now, no one knew the New York Times review. You didn't know the review until about 11:15 p.m. And that always has been the most important review in the theater, particularly back then. And at the opening night of Annie at Gallagher's Steakhouse on 52nd Street, right near the theater, Reed Shelton, who played Daddy Warbucks, stood up on the bar, and he had a great bass voice, and he began to read the New York Times review. And the tension was palpable because everybody thought it had to be favorable, but how favorable? And with tears in his eyes, he read this phenomenal rave review, and the whole place erupted. The sad thing is today, most people know the reviews well ahead of time. So that old-time excitement, that you know, when the critics were in the audience opening night, That's not the case now.
Now, see, I want to be a producer. John Briglio, thank you so much for joining us today. That's the title of his new book, I Want to Be a Producer, How to Make a Killing on Broadway or Get Killed, officially released today. Take a look.